We sit glued to the TV set all night.
And every day.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of...
Hello, and welcome to TV Times 3, episode number 123. I'm Amory from MyTakeOnTV.com.
I'm Jason the TV-holic from TV-holic.com, and this week we have joining us...
Hi, I'm Danielle from Made Possible by Pop Culture and LA Examiner.
Hi, Danielle. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Danielle and I have been in a million different places together and literally have never met in person.
I know. It's weird. I think at Paley Fest it'll have to happen.
Well, I'm not going this year.
Oh.
Because I bought a house.
That's a good reason.
If I hadn't bought a house, I would.
Well, congratulations. That's a good reason. I mean, I think I might prefer that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so one of these days we're going to be in the same place at the same time instead of across the room waving. But yes, yeah, so welcome, Danielle. And for those of you who don't know Danielle, like, Danielle's going to tell us a little bit about how she kind of got into blogging. Like, was there a TV show that made you want to write about TV, or was it something that, you know, you went to school for? What was your story?
Well, actually, I mean, there were a ton of TV shows that made me want to get into production, and I was in film and TV production for a few years, and when the writer's strike hit, I found myself out of work and said, I really love TV, let me write about it, and I started my own personal blog, Made Possible by Pop Culture, just as something to kill time, you know, not professionally, just to something to do while I waited for the strike to end. And I just found that I really loved it and that I was enjoying writing about shows I actually watched and liked more than working on shows I maybe didn't want to tell anybody I was working on. So I kind of, you know, once the strike was over, I said, I'm going to obviously try to find some work to pay my bills, but I'm also going to try to blog professionally, see, you know, if I could freelance for different sites, get paid for it, make it a career. And that obviously was a few years ago, but I've been doing it full time now for just about a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Nice. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Mine's kind of a side thing, but I do it more and more now than I had in years past. So it's something I'm more interested in every day. And I keep telling myself the day I get bored or it feels like a chore is when I'm going to stop. So at least right now I can keep going. Exactly. And it's not hit that point yet.
And there's so much good TV on now that I don't think you're going to hit that point anytime soon.
Exactly, exactly. So yay! So here we go with some news, and I'm sure there's stuff that we didn't find because there's always stuff that we don't find. But Fox announced that this season will be the final season of House, and it's funny. I had some people respond with, "Oh, you know, I'm going to miss it," and I had other people say, "Oh, that show's still on." So I think it's probably a good time for it to take its leave.
Yeah, I think it's probably a good time for it to go. I was starting to think that maybe updating Jump the Shark to Drove into the Dining Room because I think that's, as soon as that happened, you know, last season, it really was like, okay, that's...
A lot of people checked out there.
Yeah, you're just like, okay... Apparently, we're not going to ever have any character development that actually sticks with House.
Right, right. And that's why I'm sure the show's going to have, like, not a happy ending or anything like that, because it just won't, so.
Yeah, but I think at least they know that they're ending and they can write to an ending. I mean, that was the one thing that, you know, it's been on for so many years that if they didn't know when they were going out, they would be doing more and more scenes like that where it's just, well, what else can we do because we've done everything.
Exactly.
So now that they have their end date, I'm at least hopeful that, okay, they're going to, even if it's not a happy ending, they're going to wrap people up, and the fans that have stuck with it for 8 years hopefully will be satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, even if I wasn't watching, which I still am, I would be one of those people that tunes back in for the end just because, like I said, I'm going to do that with One Tree Hill too, even though I'm not watching it. Like, I'm going to check back in. I just feel like I've put so much time into it now that why not just see how it goes?
Of course. That's what I did with ER years and years ago.
You know, I watched ER like 5 years, like the first 5 years, and then stopped watching, and I watched the finale and still cried my eyes out.
Yeah.
Like, so... A show like that can do that. I'll probably cry at House, too, even if there's just, it's like a classic, typical day in the House world. This next piece of news I thought was funny because, like, on the day it was released, and then there was an 11 Smallville's getting an 11th season in comic book form. Did it come out, or was the announcement coming out? Like, I was confused about whether people were actually getting it on the day it was announced it was happening, or if it's coming out in the future.
I think it doesn't actually start coming out until, like, May or something like that.
Oh, okay. I have no idea. Smallville's the show I did not go back to watch the finale.
It's going to be released weekly, like, on an episodic basis, digitally. And then there will also be, I guess, a print version that will then follow of it. But just, another show that, fans can continue on with the characters and stuff like that. Although I'm interested in, since it's a comic book and, like, the rights will be different, that they'll actually... Part of the problem with the finale and stuff like that was getting the full rights to use Superman stuff is expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they didn't go full out with that. But the comic book's supposed to pick up where the series ended. And so the series ended with he's Superman. I suppose that in comic book form they have, they have full rights to be able to do that type of stuff.
Interesting.
For me, I'm more curious... They want to keep around a lot of the characters, Green Arrow and Chloe and, the ones that people fell in love with on Smallville, even separately from the comics. And the CW is still pushing forward with a Green Arrow pilot right now. So if these things end up going simultaneously, that's what I'm curious to see, if there's going to be bleed over or if there's, if there's issues getting rights to putting him in the comics because of the show.
I think with the Green Arrow, they're just completely starting over with just a totally different, like, not the same world as Smallville.
In the pilot.
With the Green Arrow story that they're working on, the pilot they're working on is that it'll be, completely different, have nothing.
Right. But that's why I think it's going to be it might be kind of weird, because if the comics are coming out in the fall, when if that pilot gets picked up, would also be airing. You'll have two versions of the Green Arrow living side by side, and a lot of the fans are the same.
Yeah, and I think that CW would be hoping to kind of capitalize on the favorite Green Arrow. Everybody loved Green Arrow, even if it's not the same story, even if it's not the same group of people. They're kind of hoping that the Smallville people would tune into a show, with two Arrow. So then how does having the Green Arrow that they know and exists on paper or digital form, maybe they kind of, I don't know if a comic book's going to draw away a complete TV audience, but it's going to compete, and it could be an interesting issue.
The comic book stuff is always funny anyways, in that there's a whole contingent that want, any type of movie or TV show to be, exactly like their favorite, whatever their favorite version of the comic book character, because, they've changed, some of them have been around forever, and they continue to reboot them and change them all the time. With the basic story being the same and stuff like that. I'm interested, in the new Spider-Man movie, it looks like they've sort of changed some of the mythology behind Spider-Man a little bit. And I'm interested in that just because if you're going to do another movie, why tell the exact same, same story? I'm interested in seeing new stories around something that's familiar,
We'll see how it turns out. Keeping our eyes open for that one. And then our last piece of news, which I think is kind of a no-brainer for the network, Sci-Fi has renewed Being Human for a third season after great ratings, and Face Off, it'll be their third because they're in their second right now. So it renewed both of them for a third season, which is good. I really like Mackenzie Westmore. I really like what they do with Face Off. It's something different, and I'm so impressed by what they're able to do with the limited time they have. So that's fun for Sci-Fi. Good for them. Even though I'm still resenting them for Eureka, but just
fine. But even the Being Human, speaking of things that are, it's a new version of a previous series, of a British series. And so what I like about this season is that they've finally diverged pretty much from, the previous series, where the first season felt very familiar. Even though it didn't quite go to the exact same place, it felt very familiar. This season seems like they've got a handle on what they want this series to be.
Which Shameless is doing this year too.
Yeah.
They're diverging wonderfully, and I love them. And yes. I love that show. It's not on our list, but I love that show.
Shameless couldn't have been more. I mean, the first few episodes were almost verbatim, like the exact same script.
So that's our news. Any other news that's out there? I'm sure you'll find it, or you've already found it, or it'll be old news by the time this is out. So yeah, moving on to TV on DVD. There's a lot coming that I'm not, like, you have to go out and buy it right now. You have to be waiting for it for February 21st. But Danielle and I both kind of agreed that there was three big ones coming out. I mean, Family Matters, love Family Matters. Love Family Matters. Season 2 is coming out. Nurse Jackie Season 3 and Weeds Season 7, which Weeds for me, I watch every episode, and I'm going to watch it till the end, which it never seems to end. But it's another completion for my DVD collection's sake. So that's something I would get. But yeah, I mean, all three are good things to have in the collection put on the wall.
Yeah, I have to say, I was super excited about Family Matters just because I'm a big nostalgia TV person. And
oh, yeah.
I don't understand why some of those shows, why they're only just now releasing seasons 2, seasons 3. Like, you know, I understand the audience is different, and I understand you don't know that you necessarily have a market, or maybe it's hard to license some of the old music and put it out on DVD. But I've been waiting for some shows for a very long time. So when I see stuff like this, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad they're moving in that direction.
Absolutely.
The music rights thing kills me
on
the old shows. Because I'm like, strike a deal already.
Yeah.
Don't hold something up like that with, you must pay us a gazillion dollars. Because it's like, if they don't put it out, you're getting nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you do put it out with a reasonable deal, you're getting something for every time they sell one of these, which you're not getting now. Plus, the music is going back out to, you know, a new generation of people would be, you know, people starting to be our age that have kids or something like that, that would go back and watch something like that with their kids, or you know, with something like Family Matters or something. And
was this the first season where what was her name? Judy? Was her name?
The one who went up to the attic.
The one who went upstairs and never came back.
I think.
Oh, the show.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
I know. She disappears like in the middle of a random season, so I wasn't sure when that was.
I know. It's been so long since I've seen it because it's not on DVD, so I haven't seen it. But now I will be able to.
So, yeah, so those are the three that we're looking forward to. What is everybody else buying? I mean, I'm looking for housewarming gifts, so you can buy them for me. Tell you where to send them.
We'll have links where you can find out more about them in the show notes.
Excellent.
It's, as Michael Scott might say, it's a win-win-win.
Mm-hmm.
You get the same great deal that you would get at Amazon, whether you go through our link or not. But if you go through our link, we also get a small cut, small percentage.
See, you can help us out, folks.
Support the podcast. And Amory, I want to know, do you have like a dedicated room in the new place? Like that just DVDs?
No,
or
I don't, but I am building a gigantic shelf that will go behind my couch so that I can put all my DVDs on display. Because with the way my new living room works, there's like cutouts in every window and every wall, except for the one where my couch has to go because my couch is 10 feet wide. It's a whole other issue. But no, it's I'm going to take a picture of it when it's all done, and it's going to look excessive, and it's going to be amazing. So that's TV on DVD. And now it's time for prime time. You know what I forgot that I had in my head all day, and that just reminded me? Devil Town by Tony Luca.
Nice.
Oh, my God. I've been listening to it nonstop.
Do you have it in your head because he's on The Voice now, or because Friday Night Lights is still in your head?
Kind of a combination of everything, because I just love Tony Luca. Well, I'm going to talk about, I'm adding Tony Luca to our reality check later,
sure.
So The Voice is getting back on the list. So our first show is Castle, season 4, episode 14 and 15. We have The Blue Butterfly and Pandora. Ray IM'd me today, and she said, God, how much different would Castle be if Jennifer Beals was Beckett?
Right?
And I thought, how much better, not just different, how much better, because love me some Stana now, but I was never a fan in the beginning, and she just brought such a different energy. But so first let's talk about the noir episode, which was not as noir as I was expecting it to be.
Yeah. I agree. That's exactly. I mean, I, you know, you hear big 40s episode. I, in the back of my head, think, okay, it's a sweep stunt. They're going all out. And there were not nearly enough flashbacks for me personally.
Yeah.
Because part of it was because Mark Pellegrino was really only needed for the flashbacks. And I wanted more Mark Pellegrino. That was a big
thing. Maybe we always do want more Mark Pellegrino.
Well, I mean, I just don't, you know, you get a guy like that to come do the show. I figure, okay, it must be a pretty juicy role to entice him. He's got so many jobs. He's a little bit busy. And then I kept waiting for them to bring him back and bring him back. And they didn't. And I was like, okay, I want to watch the other show that I'm sure somebody wrote about in fan fiction online where it's all him all the time.
Yes. Yes. Because, see, I did like the reveal and how it was kind of figured out who did it, so that Molly Quinn got to do something different a little bit, you know. Molly Quinn got to do something, but I just, I don't know. And then poor Seamus only gets to say, what, boyo in his Irish accent. I don't know if that's the only thing he could say. I have no idea. But, you know, solid episode in that it was a good castle episode, but I don't know that they needed the... They didn't. No, I'm not saying I don't know. They didn't need all the flashbacks to, like, tell the same story.
No. No, the flashbacks just made it cool. It just made it a different level of episode. But if you're going to do that, I want you to go all in. And do, I'm not saying the entire episode should have been flashback, but I probably would have liked double what they had.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Well, for me, I thought it was one of my favorite episodes of the show. I just thought it was so well written with using that as the flashbacks in the way that they tied it, that story to the Beckett and Castle story and the times where, you know, like Castle slips up and he says, Kate, and she's like, wait, are you picturing me as, and he's like, oh no, I said fate. And then later on there was something else where, you know, he says something to her and you get that look like, wait, what are you talking about? And it has something to do with the case. I just thought they interwove the two stories really well. And then they just had a lot of fun with the style when they were doing it. And I just love the type of stuff when they play with the form of the show, you know, or just the fun stuff that they had, like Castle reading the thing in the beginning. And then all of a sudden he's like, why am I narrating?
Yeah.
They just had a lot of fun with the form of that style of 40s detective, you know, movie. Yeah. Or you know, it was just one of those episodes where you just kind of had a smile on your face the whole time.
You know what? It was nice to see Lainey get to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I like her. So let's talk about this week's episode, Pandora. Whereas I think I preferred this week's episode to last week's, it just felt like there was an urgency to it. I think that having them get involved with the CIA, but still having them do what they would do anyway, which is try and solve the case and always solve the case instead of whoever else they're helping. I like when they do this two-parter, suspenseful, what's going to happen. Spoiler alert, Castle and Beckett aren't going to die.
if they didn't die in a nuclear explosion.
Right.
Or they didn't freeze to death or like...
yeah.
Oh, man.
For sweeps, they do really like ratchet up the importance of whatever the mystery of the, you know, of the week is, or in this case of the 2 weeks.
Yeah. But I also feel like at this point it's, I mean, the fans know they're not going to die, but it's about, you know, you put them in this situation where they're panicking because they don't intellectually know they're not going to die. And everybody is hoping that that brings out their secrets that they tell each other once and for all, I love you and whatever. I mean, I don't obviously get that from last night's episode because I think Jennifer Beals complicating things a little bit for Beckett. But just the idea that, oh my God, it could happen any day now because it has to happen soon or there's going to be a riot on Andrew Marlowe's hands.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I keep saying anytime I talk about, I kind of compare Castle and to Bones. And how they handle the will they, won't they. I like how Castle does it. I like how they keep them apart, why they keep them apart. And I just hope that they don't get to the point where, oops, we have to throw them together and not let the audience see that.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do take the time to have that scene where she says, you know, I heard you say you love me and all that stuff. Like, so hope that sooner than later. You're right. Andrew's probably sick of hearing about it.
Well, I think that'll be sooner rather than later. I just kind of hope that it's not in one of those situations where they are in peril and they think, right. Oh, you know, this could be my last moment. So now I'm going to say it, because then when they, you know, get out of the situation and they're realizing, oh, I'm okay and my life must go on, they can still avoid the subject again.
Right. They can pull the old, I was just under pressure. I'm so concerned.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I don't want it to happen like that if it's going to happen.
Right. I'm with you on that one.
I like what they're doing with, in keeping them apart, they still more and more, you know, like the previous week's episode and even this one, while the case is bigger and stuff like that, it also ends up bringing in one of the previous people that he followed around to get information for a book. And it just happens to be another beautiful woman, you know, and like when Kate asked, so how many women have you stalked in the guise of research for a book, you know, and he's like, you know, and doesn't really say anything. I think that some of the stuff that it brings up in their relationship, they've been doing a really good job of having them together, but not together, and then playing with these things along the way of where they're at in their relationship. And they need to, you know, they still have some bumps in the road, obviously. And I think that this one, especially with seeing how it plays out, you know, next week, finding out possibly more about what type of relationship they actually had back then and how it's the same or different. And, you know, just the stuff like the conversation where they're in the car, where he's talking about how, you know, how long ago that was and that he's, you know, a much more developed writer and she's a much, you know, more interesting, fuller character and stuff like that. It was
right.
Those are the moments and stuff like that, that I think they do a really good job of keeping them together. And I still think it sort of falls into, they have them where they're almost dating without actually dating.
Right.
They give them the moments like, you know, no, but you're my partner.
Right. And his mom saying, oh, it's your better half. And Cass not even flinching about it. Like, I loved that little line.
Yeah. All that type of stuff. They really are doing. Now, they can't go forever doing that type of stuff. But for right now, I think they're handling it one of the best that I've seen of this type of, you know, the will they, won't they. They're right. going to at some point.
Well, I have to say that I definitely hope we see more of Jennifer Beals and Nathan Fillion relationship next week, because I feel like the way she played off him in last night's episode, she was having more fun with it because they've been apart, and she, you know, obviously Castle, he's in a situation where he didn't necessarily want Beckett to ever find this out. He, you know,
right.
It makes it a little bit more special if you think you're the only one. And I feel I got this vibe that, you know, Jennifer Beals' character, she kind of had fun with being his muse and partnering with him in a way that, although Beckett clearly has fun, she still is reluctant to give in to. Mm-hmm. So I think it's hopefully a challenge that can bring that out in her, that can make her step up and show, you know what, I do appreciate him being around.
Did you watch the preview for next week?
I didn't, actually. Did they show that?
In the preview, they showed a little clip of where Jennifer Beals' character says, it's her talking to him about how they've, you know, sort of messed up and lost the guy they were looking for and, you know, have maybe messed up the case and stuff. And her line is, she says, this is not one of your novels. You can't just rewrite the ending like you did with Us.
Interesting.
And so interesting to find out more about what exactly was the relationship that was in the book that Beckett obviously knows. That's one of the things I always like about the Beckett character, is she goes, wait, you were the inspiration for, and she, you know, names the character that she just like knows like everything about all his books. Always like those moments too. But they sort of hinted at that there is something definitely interesting in whatever their story is. So I'm assuming that that'll come out.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Cool. All right. Moving on. Happy endings. Season 2, episode 13, The St. Valentine's Day Massacre. This show, you guys. I love the show.
So much.
Like, I watched it 3 times in 2 days because I love it so much.
This episode for me, I mean, there was lots of stuff in it, but this episode for me was them in the limo referencing Friends.
They were so meta, too.
The way they did it and ending with Max being Fat Joey was, and it's like, and you're Rachel, and she's like, yeah, I can see that, you know, type of thing. And it was really well done because it is the Friends for, you know, sort of a new generation or a new time.
Yeah, I will say that I think Alex is the Joey, so I was a little... I thought picking Max was a little too easy, but that's okay. That's just me and my, like, really nerdy Friends trivia.
We talked on a previous, a little bit about how they were, like, Friends characters, but that some of the aspects, they're not exactly like. Right. Some of the things,
yeah.
And that we talked about, you know, Alex being the Joey in some respects because she always... Because
she's just so dumb.
Except in this episode when she knows everything about Valentine's Day.
Oh, my God.
She falls into her Wikipedia holes.
Oh, my God. I mean, the show fires on every cylinder. And a show that can have a really emotional scene and have a really funny, like, ridiculous dance number by Damon Wayans Jr. Just everything came together in this episode for me. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, Max is one of my favorite characters on television in general.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The fact that we're getting this other side to him to see, you know, what he was like in a relationship, what he will be like in a relationship after he's had his heart broken, I'm really intrigued to see where the next couple episodes go with James Wolk's character.
Yeah, because it certainly doesn't hurt that it's James Wolk either.
Well,
cause that
of course. I know. I mean, it really – it's. You really can't ask for a better potential boyfriend for any of the characters.
Yeah.
Well, I think so far, I think Max is probably the character that sort of fleshing out more about, you know, backstory and more about his character. I think his character is probably the one they've done the least with.
Right.
In some respects. And so it's kind of nice to see him get more of a storyline so that you continue to, you know, learn more and more about all the characters, and he's not just the, you know, sort of there to say a line or something like that, that he's actually a full
character.
And
what I kind of loved about the episode, too, is that, you know, everybody for, you know, with Modern Family, with Cam and Mitchell, they made this big deal about how, oh, they're going to kiss in this episode,
yes.
And it's going to be a big deal. And, you know, spoilers for the Glee episode tonight, like Brittany and Santana are finally going to kiss or whatever. It was totally just normal. It was in the conversation. It happened. James Holt kissed Adam Pally, and it just happened. It was natural. Nothing needed to be written about it to say that it was like, oh, this big event. It just felt normal.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think I'm happy that that's how it happened because I don't think it is a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, God,
should,
no.
Or that it should be a big deal in the media. But I honestly think the only reason it wasn't a big deal is just because the show, unfortunately, doesn't get the press that modern, like, the mainstream.
That's true. That's
modern
true.
Gets. It's unfortunate because I think more people need to watch the show. And I think more people, you know, once they actually sit down and watch it, I have never met one person who said, I'm not watching it again because I didn't like it. I just know a lot of people that they haven't sat down and given it a shot yet. And so
exactly.
I think, honestly, this is one of the episodes from this season that I would point to and be like, if you're going to watch an episode to try out the series and you don't want to start with the beginning, I would give them this one. I think this one has great moments for every character and really kind of hits the nail on the head with who everybody is.
Right. Dave going from gung-ho to just downtrodden in like 5 seconds. That's just so Dave, like that you've seen that repeated, and you're right. Like this is a great episode for somebody who has never seen it to get involved because, well, I mean, I think everybody should be watching every episode, like you said.
Of course,
happy that I mean it doesn't get the press and it doesn't get the high ratings like the other shows are getting, but it is doing well enough that I think that it may be, knock on wood, but I'm hoping it may be kind of out of the woods now as far as, you know, cancellation talks and being on the bubble. So, I mean, it clearly is. As soon as somebody watches it, they're into it.
Yeah.
People are starting to get more involved. So, fingers crossed that it keeps going that way.
Yeah, it's
happy
definitely
ending.
On the list of shows that you sort of can't believe. There's some shows where you kind of can understand why they don't. This has some, like, very meta moments and some things that you definitely have to be paying attention to get the joke, but it also has a lot more broad comedy appeal as well that I don't understand why it doesn't get a larger audience, why there aren't more people watching it. Although I think a lot of it ends up is, I think there's way more people watching some of this stuff than they're actually able to calculate, you know?
Well, yeah, they're just not Nielsen households. Like, it's a different demographic.
I wonder how well those, you know, their statistical models and stuff like that really represent the TV viewing audience or stuff like that. And then so many other ways to watch things nowadays that I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think this also may fall into the category of one of those shows that the people that would be watching it may be more likely to watch it online or...
Right.
Or some other way. And I know so many people that are just, like, watching stuff on DVD now that this would be the type of show that they'd totally watch and just, like, watch, like, the whole thing, like, the first season or something like that. And you're just like, but if you don't watch it on TV when it's on, you're not going to get more DVDs to watch later on.
It's funny because there are still shows that, you know, got canceled early enough in their first season that they never released the DVD, and I'm still mourning them. I'm like, well, I, you know, if more people had watched that, we could all be watching it right now.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, there's something to be said for, I mean, look, I could spend a whole podcast talking about how I think the overnight ratings, Nielsen's, are very antiquated, especially for shows like Happy Endings or even like Cougar Town, which it's just a different, it's a younger audience that's watching it. It's an audience that isn't necessarily watching it live. So, you know, that DVR plus 7 number really helps. I feel like that's a whole conversation by itself. But just the fact that if people are willing to sit down and watch it, even if not live, because what are the odds they have a Nielsen box, if they're willing to watch it on DVR or online or something, that's a small step in the right direction. Personally, I feel like Happy Endings and Cougar Town are shows that should be back-to-back, not competing for a time slot. I mean, I'm kind of hopeful that, you know, Cougar Town, if its numbers do as well in its new time slot that it did when it was in the 9:30 Wednesday, now Happy Endings time slot, that they'll, you know, they'll come back for season 4, Happy Endings maybe will come back for season 3, and maybe they will rejigger some things in their schedule and give them the best shot by putting them back to back so that fans or audiences that are of that comic sensibility will just be able to sit down for an hour on one night and watch it rather than have to like try to find it in the schedule.
Yeah, I think that they would make a good pairing for like the times where The Bachelor is on. And
you mean like just get rid of The Bachelor?
Because there's no Dancing with the Stars results show the next day on Tuesday.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
Like right now they're playing The River in that 9 o'clock time slot. When originally, way back when the fall schedules were put out, they were going to do, you know, The Bitch in Apartment 23 and Cougar Town in that time slot. And I think that two times a year where you don't have, where you're running a Bachelor's season through, you do an hour comedy block in the 9, and that Cougar Town, you know, Happy Endings Cougar Town, because that's the other thing with those, they're not really, you know, how much that stuff makes any sense anymore, but it's still, they don't feel like 8 o'clock or 8:30 shows, really, and so I think they would fit like right there with an hour comedy block there, or if they had, you know, even a 2 hour comedy block on Tuesday as well.
Yeah.
Well, my thoughts are, I mean, stuff. You have the 4 established Wednesday comedies, which I don't think any are going away. As much as people malign it, they have Last Man Standing, which I don't think is going to go anywhere. I think Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23 is going to do great. Hopefully Cougar Town will come back and, you know, do something. Like, they have so much comedy that they could start to spread it out. I just don't know if they're going to get adventurous and try that.
Well, it almost seems like that Last Man Standing would fit, like if they did like Last Man Standing, The Middle, mm-hmm. Modern Family, Suburgatory.
Yeah,
like a nice
those are all
family-oriented,
even though they're somewhat stylistically different. They're all family comedies, you know, built around family. I think that would make really good
great Tuesday.
And that you put Happy Endings and, you know, Cougar Town on another night together.
Yeah, especially, you know, Apartment 23, and then maybe there's something in the new pilot block that'll fit that same sensibility.
We shall see, folks.
Yeah, that was the If We Were Running ABC segment of the podcast.
Yeah, if we were running ABC, here's what would happen. Revenge would be renewed forever. Revenge.
What? That's going to happen anyway.
Episode 14, Perception. So this is the one before the fire and the ice ball. And you guys, I mean, I say this, I've been saying this about each show that we've talked about. I'm just like, I love this show. But seriously, I love Revenge. And I'm just so happy that it's on. I'm such like a little, I'm giddy about it. I love the show.
No, I totally do too. And honestly, I didn't expect to like it as much as I do when I first saw the pilot. So the way, like just where they've taken the story and how they've expanded every character. And I kind of always had crazy theories about David Clark. And, you know, I kind of thought, oh, maybe Charlotte could be his daughter. And the fact that they not only said that definitively to the audience, but also to the characters at this point in the story, I think tells you something about how fast they're moving and how many more twists and turns are going to come. And that to me is just extremely exciting because, you know, there are a lot of shows on TV that, you know, we just talked about Castle with the Will They or Won't They. Well, that's season 4 and they're still dragging out that relationship. It still works for their storytelling. But for Revenge, I feel like the fact that they don't rest on their laurels and they kind of keep you on your toes with little cliffhangers, but also with major character developments, that's what's keeping me not only coming back every week, but like actively coming back and saying, oh my God, is it Wednesday at 10 o'clock yet? Because I need to watch this show. And they've just done so much. I mean, Nolan was a character I never expected to like, and yet now he's one of my favorite characters on TV. So I'm very excited. There are some good things coming.
I look at the show, and even when you hate a character, it's because, like, the person playing the character is doing it so well.
Wait,
like,
but who's hate?
Yeah.
Unless we're talking about Once Upon a Time.
Well,
that's a different story.
I don't hate the character of the queen. I hate the person playing her. Oh, anyway.
That's what I said. It's a different story.
Well, no, I was just asking who you hate, what character you hated on Revenge.
Well, like, I hated Tyler.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant currently on Revenge.
Oh, no, no. I love Tyler, but everybody. And even Declan and his stupid accent, which kind of been tuned down a little bit. I love it. I don't dislike any of the main cast, but like even, you know, like the tertiary characters like that who are so significant, he was played so well by Ashton Holmes?
Yeah.
Like I'm like, I hate this guy, but I love how he's played, so I don't hate him as much. And it's like, there's very few shows that I feel like can do that.
No, I agree. I just, I think it's interesting because I really fully expected to hate Victoria, not hate Madeline, but just, you know, she's the enemy of Emily and we're being told that we should, you know, it's Emily's story. And so automatically we should sympathize and whatever. And there are just little things, little nuances that Madeline does, but also, you know, just things that have come out about the character and some of the reasons behind her actions. And while I don't always agree with them, they're justified in the character's mind and in the situation. And I kind of second guess my hatred because of that, because she's so interesting and so complex. And it's like, well, I can't hate you. I mean, I can dislike what you're doing, but if I hate you, that means I want you to go away. And I don't want you to go away because
you're
making the show so much more intriguing.
Yeah. Like you get little moments like when she goes to the bar with her daughter.
In jeans. Who knew? You know, oh my God.
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever see that again, but
I almost fully expected that scene to like for her to like start playing pool or something, or just like completely go, you know, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There, I was like a whole other person before I was with your father. But
and even after, I mean, I kind of wonder, you know, the more we see these flashbacks of her and David and their story, you know, you only kind of see what Emily remembers. But I'm very curious to know who she was, like if this was real love and if, you know, she was hoping to run away with him or whatever. I feel like she would have been a completely different person. And I want to see that. Like, I want to flashback and see who she was and get even more sympathy for her.
I agree. I agree with that completely. So yeah, so Revenge. Oh, so, I love it.
So, should we talk about your theory for, since
yeah.
I know when this is posted, everybody will have seen Fire and Ice, but we're...
Yeah, as of this recording, only Danielle has seen the next episode.
I'm Well, I'm just curious as to people's theories. Like, I went on Twitter earlier and was like, I'm not allowed to tell you what I know, but what do you guys think? Because, you know, there, I feel like in the beginning of the show, everyone kind of assumed where things were going and, you know, in multiple storylines, not just with the shooting on the beach. So things have diverged so much for every character that I'm just curious what your theories are.
You know, I don't know. Was it established in the pilot, like the pilot that we saw, had it been established that we didn't obviously see Daniel getting shot. Why? It was never established either. Why, like, Victoria's yelling, Daniel, I guess because she's just assuming she doesn't see him.
Yeah,
he's not there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Part of me kind of is, as much as I love Josh Bowman, I just think of the stories that could come up if it is, in fact, him who is the one that shot and dead on the beach. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like the only people it can't be are Emily. I mean, obviously, you see everybody running, so the people in that running scene, it maybe couldn't be.
True.
But, like, Jack, we know, finds the body. Declan and Charlotte are on the beach when we see the body. So it's like, what could it be? I don't know, and that's what I love about the show, because I don't even want to formulate a guess, because they're going to completely prove me wrong and be it in a way that I'm going to be completely okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the magic of, I mean, that's the, you know, the writing is just smart, and I don't know, it was funny because we did screen it last night here in LA with some of the cast, and the cast, obviously, they're on, I don't know, episode 17 or 18 right now. They've shot this episode. They hadn't seen it, but they know what happens, and they were still sitting there like gasping when they revealed it. And I was like, I can't tell if you're legitimately gasping or you're doing it for our benefit. And so I talked to them afterwards, and they're like, no, like, we hadn't seen it, so, you know, to watch it play out, it's just so emotional, and, you know, we knew what was happening, but it's just different when you see it and when you realize what it means for where the story is going. So yeah, I guess we'll have to talk again after everyone's seen it.
I'm sure I'll be tweeting up a storm as soon as it ends tomorrow night.
It'll be a stay away from Twitter night for me.
Yeah,
I would recommend that. Especially if you're not watching it live, stay away from Twitter. Absolutely, I recommend.
I even try and stay away from even some of, like, people's speculation or trying to come up with theories about stuff, because sometimes somebody will say something just completely, you know, you're just like, oh, that couldn't happen or whatever. But then it's in your head.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, it's not nearly as good as you're like, oh, that jackass ruined it for me. You know? Right. He was right.
I will tell you to stay away from my blog then, because I may have accidentally done that 2 weeks ago and didn't know.
Yeah. If there's a show that, like this, where you're not quite sure where things are going, and for people like us that watch so much TV, to find a show that does that, you know, more often than not, doesn't exactly go where, because there's so many times that even if it's not, like, way ahead of time that, you know, like, you're watching something and you can start spitting out the dialogue before they do.
Right.
Or something's about to happen and you go, well, I know what's going to happen now, and then it happens. You know, even if you just come up with it just a, you know, a few minutes or a few seconds before it happens. So when you find a show that you're watching along, and very seldom are you going, you know, you have that feeling that you know that that's where it's going. You know, the other show that does that for me is Vampire Diaries. You really have, most of the time, have no idea where they're going. Right. Revenge does it really well. And like you said in the beginning, when you watch the first episode, you're like, this is really good.
It's never going to be able to keep it up.
But how are they going to do this on a takedown a week basis or whatever? You know, how is the show going to, what is the show really going to be? And then once they got into like 5-6 episodes and you're like, okay, I see what they're doing and how they can continue to expand things and how this show can continue to go and still keep me guessing along the way, you're just like, yes, on board.
Absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I feel like every episode it gets a little bit more, you know, because they know the expectations that they have to live up to based on what they've already done. And the fact that they can keep that momentum going, very impressive.
Yes. So that's Revenge. We're looking forward to seeing what happens. Our next show is Fringe, Season 4, Episode 12, Welcome to Westfield. Have at it, folks. I don't watch.
Well, I thought this was actually one of my favorite episodes of the season, because there's been a lot that's been teased about how much, you know, we can, maybe this new world. All right, look, I'm just going to say it, because I've gotten in trouble. I've gotten in trouble for dancing around it because fans are like, oh, just go there. So I'm going to say it. Because of Welcome to Westfield, I am fully invested in this new world that is not, obviously, it's not the same universes that we've seen for the previous years. And I'm okay if Peter doesn't go home, if he stays in this world and lives out life with this Olivia, whatever that may be, if he can't find a way home, if he decides I need to save this Olivia and therefore I'm not going to try. I don't think that's where the show is going, because I think that too many other fans and too many, you know, the writers themselves want to see the payoff for the characters that they developed for the other 3 years. But at the same time, I want him to stay now, because I like the idea that this Olivia is having these weird memories and we're not quite sure why, and you know, we're not quite sure how or what it all means. And I'm very eager to find out what it all means, even though I will say that a lot of the episode as a whole reminded me of Jacksonville. And I found that too coincidental to not be important.
Well, I think this episode is very interesting in how it ended, in that with her being in that, they sort of played with that two states idea with, you know, the episode as a whole, and that you weren't sure whether, at first you weren't sure whether that's why she was sort of starting to remember things, but then once you get to it, you're like, but the likelihood that the other Olivia is in a small town in the other one at the same time or whatever, but she wouldn't know these things. These are memories from Peter's past or whatever. So, but she's, so far they've shown, she's the only other person that has started to, the things that Peter remembers have started to leak back in. But it definitely looked like, in a way, that Olivia switched, at least there at the end of the episode, where she was
right.
Peter's previous Olivia. She was under those things, didn't have the memories necessarily of the way they are now. And so I'm interested in how they're playing with, is there going to be something where Peter finally comes to the realization that he's not in like some third universe or something like that, but that he's in the same place that he was, but something happened to erase him from it? Or are they going to play with, there's not really a way to fix it, but yet Olivia starts to remember, or she starts to remember things too, and so they, you still have that payoff for those two characters?
Right.
They have a lot of ways to go with the things. The only thing in this episode, well, I think the episode as a whole, and what they want to do and where they got to with that ending of her being, you know, Peter's Olivia, is the one thing that bothered me in the episode is, way in the beginning, I already knew what was going on. And it really bothers me and sort of pulls me out of enjoying the episode as much as I could, when it was way too long in the episode before all these characters even pondered the idea that the two worlds, the two universes could be colliding.
Right.
And you're just like, you characters here, as us, the audience, have all this information. The rest of the people in the town and stuff don't have this information, so they'd be freaking out, like, what's going on? But I knew from the get-go that this is where they were going with that. And so that whole thing, the whole episode, how it played out, wasn't quite as an enjoyable episode, because I don't like watching these super smart characters seem dumb.
Right. I don't know if I believe they should have known, only because, you know, whether or not this is...
Well, it's not that they should have known exactly what was going on, but there was nobody... It just seemed way too long into the episode before anybody ever pondered the idea that the two worlds might...
Yeah.
You know, the two things were colliding.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It just seemed like it took them too long to get there, that it seemed like they could have got there quicker and then spent more time in the how do we fix this phase of it. But to me, you have all these brilliant characters that have all the same information as you, and you come up with what's going on long before they do. It just pulled me out of it for a while. It was still a good episode, but, you know, it all brought it back when Peter shows up at Olivia's at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that, I mean, that, A, that's what people have been waiting for, and B, you know, going forward, what does that mean? Does she have these memories permanently? Is she permanently, quote-unquote, switched?
Or is she going to jump back and forth like you saw some of the people doing in the when the two worlds were, you know, were colliding?
And the thing too is, I mean, why her? Why now? When everybody else, you know, problem has quote been solved for the town of Westfield, but all of a sudden now there's this lingering remnant. I personally think it has something to do with whatever Nina was doing to her as a child, but that's just me and my twisted theories.
Yeah. Well, I think some of it is in that in all the different universes, it's always played out that she is sort of special. And so it could be whatever was done to her or however the things are similar to how they happened to her in the other timelines. And that maybe being in a spot where two worlds were colliding did something to her that caused her to start remembering things from the other timeline. Or those are the things that I'm interested to see. The next episode, where are they going to go? How are they going to explain how that episode ended? And where do they go from there?
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So that's Fringe. I mean, I keep saying I'm going to, like, catch up. And well, I know I should.
You have to start, I mean, wherever you are not, you have to watch them all in a row. That's the thing about Fringe. So it is a little harder, to, I think, to catch up on Fringe than most other shows.
But I'm going to dedicate myself to it at some point. We'll see. I'm sure it's probably going to be after it's canceled and I'll feel bad about it, but I don't think that my viewing is going to help it. But I do love Josh Jackson, so. I did, like, watch the first and second season, I guess, and then I just stopped. I guess it was against something else I was watching, as is always the case. So we're going to move to our last show in prime time tonight. It's Cougar Town.
Yeah.
Season 3, episode 1, Ain't Love Strange. Damn it, if this episode didn't get me. This made me tear up at the end. Spoilers.
Well, I think I'm the only person who picked up on this, and it was not intentional, as I have now learned, but I got super strong Chandler and Monica proposal vibes from the entire episode. And I think maybe I'm, like I said earlier, just super nerdy when it comes to Friends. But I have to say, like, as weird as it sounds, like, getting those vibes made me love the episode even more. Because even though they weren't intending to pay an homage to Courtney Cox's previous character, I kind of took it that way anyway and was like, oh, that's really sweet. But like I said, I think it's just me. The pilot, you know, the episode's been out there. People have been seeing it at viewing parties, and I have not seen one other person say that. So it might very well just be me. But it was absolutely.
I can see that from the surprise
proposal.
Permitting
to be in control type way.
Well, Chandler in his original proposal was trying to.
Yeah, the distraction.
To be a surprise, but he went so far into the other direction to, like, yeah, I don't want to get married, you know. So, but yeah, the sort of trying to point one direction and be a secret. See, but speaking of that, being, you know, sort of a secret, you know, the secret proposal or trying to keep it a secret from her, or I have to say that the promo departments of the networks do such a disservice to their shows. In that it really bothers me even more so when I watch the screener, and on the screener for the press that are viewing it, it says, please do not spoil any plot points of the show.
Right.
And then I watch the episode and I go, wow. Because I already knew that as soon as you're watching the episode, you're like, well, I've seen this scene from the promo. You're a little bit into the episode, you know where it's going. And the way that it ends and the way that this episode builds, if you saw the promo, it did such a disservice to that ending of the episode and the overall enjoyment of the episode. Because up until, what's his name, Tom in the bar, the idea that that's what he's doing doesn't even pop into your head at all.
Right.
But you know that's where it's going from the get-go now. Just one of those things that really bothered me.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned how, well, like, the whole story of the episode, because this will be out after it premieres, is that everybody's involved in planning this proposal, you know, sharking the car and the skate rats and all this stuff. My favorite thing about the episode, though, is just the dumbest thing, is that Tom knew that he was probably going to be recruited because they know how predictable Jules is.
Right.
And yet he still slept naked.
Well, it's
which
tough.
Makes me laugh because Tom is amazing.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, I'm not entirely surprised. It's Tom. That's just what he does. He's the creepiest neuro something doctor in the world. I don't know what his exact title is, but whatever.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's just funny because, you know, they released the photos, too, before the promos. And thankfully, Bill Lawrence doesn't seem to care about spoilers because he's like, look, if I tell you what it is, then maybe you'll like it and want to tune in. But right. I do agree. I mean, the proposal, that could have been a really great surprise for a lot of people.
But really, who not watching the show saw a promo that there was going to be a proposal and went, well, I'm going to watch that.
Well, not watching the show, no. But I think, you know, those fans that maybe thought it was canceled because it hadn't been on for so long, they saw not only is it coming back, but oh my God, it's coming back in such a big way. I have to make sure I don't miss that.
I guess that's possible.
You know, look, there's so much talk still about how it's a terrible name for a show. And like, I kind of don't even like it does. That doesn't faze me. I don't really agree that Cougar Town is the worst title ever the way Bill thinks
it is. I mean,
Good
Boy's a terrible title too, but
that's what I mean. I mean, I don't, I just, you know, I get it. It's not necessarily indicative of the show now, but it was when it started. But I think that those promos definitely combated that because it's like, look, she's not, if you're turned off because you think the show is about a woman sleeping with guys half her age and you think that's not okay or whatever, not family friendly, that's not what the show is because they're showing you right there in the promo, she's getting engaged to somebody her own age. Right. So I don't know. I mean, I hope that, I mean, look, it's one of those weird things where like I said, the pilot or the premiere has been out there so much with the viewing parties that so many people who are the diehard fans that would have tuned in have already seen it. So I just hope they tune in again and watch it again to help the ratings, because if everyone's seen it and nobody tunes in, that's a terrible number. And ABC is going to be like, we justified not bringing you back because your number's terrible.
Yeah, especially if it has some huge drop off from Last Man Standing, even though that pairing, You would almost expect there to be a drop off, like you wouldn't.
Oh my God, tonight's ABC is absurd.
Yeah, really? I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work. I have to be honest. I haven't seen Last Man Standing since the pilot, so I mean, I know it's not obviously the same tone, but I could see you sticking around to want to watch another comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've never seen Cougar Town before, I don't know.
And you're not going to flip over to NBC,
right? Right. I mean, I don't know. If you've never seen Cougar Town before and you tune in because you happen to be watching Last Man Standing, it is a very sweet, family-friendly episode tonight. So, oddly, it might actually
be. It is.
Yeah, it does.
And it's funny right off the bat, too. So, if there are those people that are going to stick around after it, you know, you don't miss anything. A lot of shows kind of have a slow start, but not this week's. Like, this week's episode is funny right away. And I just hope it does.
The wine glass necklaces.
Oh, my God. I should do that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I was a little bummed that there was no Penny Can in the premiere.
Yeah.
And I wonder, maybe it's too specific. They want to save it for when they know the fans are all watching. I don't know. But I'm like, you got to come back with everything. You know, you came back with wine, but you got to come back with everything. So,
was it just me or did Busy Phillips look really, really thin in this episode?
It might have just been you.
Oh, no.
Look like huge. She just looked normal. You know, she looked like Phillips. Looks very pretty, very like cute outfit. I don't know.
Oh my God,
I
her clothes in this premiere are amazing.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's just so good. I just wish people would watch it. Oh, sigh.
I think this season. I mean, look, the show's hit its stride with what it is. So, you know, I don't think it's losing any viewers. I think it's just now a matter of getting new people to tune in and to fall in love with it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think, but as you mentioned, it does have ABC Tonight, Last Man Standing, Cougar Town, The River, Body of Proof. It's got to be the most eclectic set of primetime shows.
Yeah. You always have that one leftover night where everything's kind of scheduled.
Well, we have the show. We've got the spot. We'll put it over there.
I'm looking forward to see like how they explore what they're going to explore, because some of the storylines we know are coming up are going to be interesting, and they're still going to what I like about the show is they still introduce kind of drama in a relationship that's so established that, you know, they don't do it with breaking them up or bringing in a plot contrivance, cough, cough, Hannah. You know, like, they just, it's a grown-up comedy, and people should appreciate that. I just love it.
Yes, but a lot of audiences are not grown-up audiences.
I know.
And I don't, I mean mentally, I don't mean, like, children are watching Cougar Town. I mean, unfortunately, like, some people still just don't want to have to think. They don't want the, like, smarter joke. They want the, I can sit there and not really pay attention, and it's punchline, punchline, laugh track. So
they want CBS Monday.
So,
yeah.
Or Last Man Standing.
Hey, I love Last Man Standing, but that's because I love Tim Allen.
But, yeah, I don't
I think from your standard family sitcom, I think Last Man Standing is a very solid show.
Mm-hmm.
It provides some laughs, but it definitely falls more into the category where you can just have it on.
Yeah. Oh, God.
In a similar sense as something like Two and a Half Men, but it's not going for the dirty joke all the time.
Right.
It's going for stuff based off more, you know,
basically
family
like
problems
Tim
and stuff
Allen
like that.
Is incredulous at what his daughters are saying. Like, that's what the jokes are. And it's great. And I love it because it's so 1990 and I love it. Anyway, so that's primetime this week. Just a couple things in reality I wanted to talk about. I'm watching Top Chef, and every week I keep saying, like, I have no favorites, I hate them all. I don't know why I'm still watching, but it's kind of one of those I have to watch to see who wins now. And I think Sarah should have been gone decades ago, and I just don't want her to win. If she wins, I might swear off Top Chef for a while, because I'm going to be mad at it. Just throwing that out there. And then, then the other two shows I've really watched this week, The Challenge and The Voice, which I will never not watch The Challenge on MTV.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't care, you know, people don't like reality TV, whatever. I will always watch The Challenge. I will especially always watch it if CT is there. And I'll most especially watch it if CT is there with DM. Because let me tell you, I'm rooting for them.
Like, personally rooting for them to get back together or rooting for them to win the show? Oh, okay.
Both.
Okay. Fair enough. I just wanted to clarify. I was like, you never know. I didn't want to start going down one road if that's not what you meant. No, I agree.
Usually, it is good to clarify because I kind of go in tandem. But yes. I mean, there are just some people I can't stand. Cough, cough, Wes, glad he's gone.
I was going to say, though, how shocking was that? I know that was 2 weeks ago now, but how shocking was that a rookie took out Wes?
It was very shocking, especially because, like, they build up this whole, like, nobody can beat him and he's been in the finals so many times.
Well, he builds that up, too. I mean, he's, cocky that no one can beat him, and then he can't back it up.
I always forget that he and Johnny don't get along. Like, I always forget that, and then I remember it, and Johnny hates him again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also want to comment on the Sarah and Vinny of it all. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that Vinny would, like, just rip someone's shirt off. But in Vinny's defense, sort of, Mandy's shirt was two rubber bands. Like, it was, like, it wasn't a shirt. And somebody grazing by her in the bar could have had the same result that Vinny did. And it just sucks for Sarah because she was starting to actually have a partner that she excelled with. But I'm interested to see where it goes, and I will continue watching.
Honestly, that's like the only reality show I'm watching right now. And I know, well, that and The Voice. And I'm like, I know how that sounds, but I just don't have time, unfortunately, for a lot of reality shows. And that's just one where they always manage to bring back, in every cast, every year I say, I'm not going to watch it this year, and then they always manage to bring back someone that I haven't seen in a while and that I love so much. I'm like, I need to tune in to see what they're up to and, like, why they're still around.
Who is your person this year? Is it Mark? Because it's Mark for me.
No, honestly, there's a few. Like, I love CT, but he's been around in more recent challenges, so I wouldn't say that he's the one that, like, got me, okay, yes, I'm definitely going to watch it. But the fact that Anissa and Rachel are on, and the fact that they're paired together, I need to see how this works out, because this is going to be an explosion.
It's always a train wreck on the shows, and I love it. It's, like, different than the train wrecks you see on, like, Teen Mom and things like that. Like, this is just, I don't know, they're so, you know these people, because this is, like, the 22nd season.
Right, and I mean, I think it's a little sadder than Teen Mom, because Teen Mom, they're all 16 and making mistakes. These people are in their 30s. They should have real jobs by now. So I'm kind of like, it's that fly on the wall / rubbernecking, I'm watching a train derail type of thing.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, I mean, some of these people, like, this is all they may have. So they're so invested in this challenge.
It's definitely all Paula has. I can tell you that. That's all she does.
I mean, she seems to take it more in stride than some of the other people, though. That's what's so fascinating. Is like, I don't know anything about them in their quote-unquote real lives. I don't know if they have jobs or what they do when they're not on MTV. But some of them just get so intense that I feel like when they do go home, all they're thinking about is going to the next challenge and how they can do this differently and how they can win. And that mentality is what I like to watch crumble, because you can't anticipate what everyone else is going to bring because you don't even know who your cast members are going to be.
Exactly.
So you don't know the dynamics in the house. Like, I love watching, you know, like, okay, I don't at all buy the fact that they didn't know they were going to be with their ex before they showed up, because I feel like the legal team had to clear that it was okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you don't know who else is going to be around or what kind of challenges you're going to face. And that, to me, this season is that extra ticking time bomb, because now you have all these personal ties because the one person you rely on is the one person that is going to piss you off the most just because you have shared history. So, yeah, there's some good – I can't even imagine. I'm sure it's all more of the same, you know, drunken hookups and – fights in the house, and I'm sure at least one more team is getting sent home. Like, there's just no way, right?
There's no way they won't.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm excited.
And I love that every season there is someone that happens to. Every year. Like, how every year. Don't punch anybody. That's easy.
Right, but now there's other ways to get sent home. Apparently you accidentally and you get sent home. So I don't know. I do hope CT and DM win, though, because I've always rooted for him. I always feel like he's such an angry boy, but like, she brought out such a nicer side to him that I want them to like even each other out again, because they're both so extreme in their own ways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge. Mm-hmm. And the voice is the other thing I wanted to talk about, because for about 20 years now, maybe 21 years, I've been in love with Tony Luca.
Oh my God.
I've been in love with him. I love Tony Luca. I have all of his music on my iPod. I listen to Deviltown nonstop. And I was just looking, like, 2 days before The Voice premiered at a Where Are They Now? I think it was on Buzz Sugar or something. A Where Are They Now Mickey Mouse Club.
Mm.
And, like, you know, they got the usual, like, JC and Justin and all them. You know where they are. You know where, you know, Nikki is. You know, she's doing Awkward. And now I saw, casually mentions, and he'll be a contestant on The Voice.
Mm.
And while I was interested in The Voice because I love Blake Shelton, I love Adam, I love their interactions together, you know, Christina being my one weak link always, I was so suddenly excited, and I did not expect him to be in the Super Bowl episode, and there he was, and I love him. And that's what's guiding me through The Voice right now. I mean, I think it's such it's a novel idea, you know. There are people that I wouldn't pick based on how they look, because I just can't understand, like, how they're so different than their voice or whatever. So I like the idea that we're picking them purely on what they sound like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just
was so nervous that Tony was not going to be good and they weren't going to pick him and they saved him for last and it would be a big embarrassment, but thank God.
No, see, that's the thing. The voice isn't about embarrassing the contestants. So once they started getting into like who he was and the backstory and the like working with Christina, I thought there was no way that he wasn't going through, but I honestly kind of thought he was going to end up on her team and she wasn't. And that was going to be awkward because, you know, you started out as peers and now obviously she's so far ahead of you that I'm glad that that's not the way that it went, because that I just feel like that, you know, whether you mean for it to happen or not, there's going to be a little bit of comfortableness about advising this guy and taking this woman's advice when you used to be side by side. So,
and that's not to mention the fact that she doesn't remember him.
Well, I mean, look, let's face it. Like, you've been a fan of him for 21 years. I remember him from, like, Tiger Beat or whatever, but he looks different now. So I totally understand why she wouldn't remember him if she hasn't.
Especially, you know, all the people that she's, touch. Like, worked with in her world. Like,
Yeah, and if she
hasn't worked with as many people as Christina Aguilera has worked with, I'd imagine. So, yeah, I don't blame her that much, and I am glad that, you know, a producer said something and it did click. She did remember. It was just, it took a little nudge.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, there's tons of people that we're seeing come through The Voice this year that we've seen before. You know, whether we remember, whether the judges know. I mean, exactly. Like, there are people that, And they've been very open about it, talking about it on air in those interviews where they say, you know, they had deals or they were on this show or they whatever, you know, backup singer for Alicia Keys, whoever, whatever the case may be, that a lot of these people, because they are so prominent in the music industry, Blake, Adam, CeeLo, Christina, they may have come across a lot of these people in the past. So they should, if they remember, I think that's actually more of a detriment, because if they remember, then they're being swayed not by what they're hearing on stage, but what they know about the person. So like when Frenchie was out there last year, after they all turned around, I was like, oh God, if they remember her from Idol, like they may fight to not pick her because they think like she can't go or whatever. So, I mean, I think it's better when you, it sounds terrible to say this, but I think it's better when you don't remember people and then you can just go in with clean expectations and build up based on what you, the work you guys do together versus what you've heard about them in the past.
It's kind of, you know, on the same side of the coin, it's kind of almost my favorite thing about the show is that these people who, yes, they maybe they have fan bases already. Like last year, there was someone that one of my friends would text and say, oh, I know this person from shows they play around me. Like,
yeah.
They were people that were actually making music, and they weren't necessarily, quote-unquote, undiscovered, but they're getting a second chance to prove that, like, they should be, and I think that that's awesome. So I will sing the voices' praises until it goes away, which I don't think will be anytime soon.
I was going to say, like that. Well, I imagine you're voting for Tony then.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was going to ask you who your favorites were, but, I mean, I guess I don't have to because it's just it's
you
Tony.
Know what, though? Like, I will watch and see who... You know, I think I do want to base it on performance. I mean, there's going to be a sore spot, you know, a soft spot for Tony because I've loved him for 2/3 of my life. But I will, like, if somebody's better, I would have no problem saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I might have a little problem saying it.
Listen, he still has to make it through battle rounds.
Yes, exactly.
So hopefully, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't, hopefully he will, but it may not even be up to America if, you know, they, the coaches vote for battle rounds, so.
Well, that's my take on reality, our take on reality this week. I was raised in a devil town. There it is, it comes back again. So, yeah, thank you, Danielle, for joining
us.
Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Lovely chat about TV, some of our favorite shows. Jason, are you still on the line, and have we been recording this whole time?
Yeah. I am still on. It's still recording.
Okay, good. I had that thought about halfway through, and I was like, that would not be good. So, places you can find us, we'll have everybody's information online so you know where to find Danielle. We are at tvtimes3.com. Spell it all out. Twitter, iTunes, stitcher.com/TV?
Correct.
Nice. Facebook, did I say that already? I don't know. We're on the internet. And our music, when it wasn't provided by me, provided by Tony Luca, it was from IODA, or will be from IODA PromoNet. The song is TV Party from the Asylum Street Spankers from their Mercurial title, put out by Yellow Dog Records. That's all she wrote, folks.
Awesome.
I'm going to go make some pizza and pack another box. And there you have it. This time next week, I will be living in my new house, everybody. It's exciting.
And, well, roughly this time next week. Sometime next week on the next episode of the podcast.
The next episode of
we'll have Kurt, Show Patrol.
Oh, Kurt. I love Kurt.
From Show Patrol will be on. And Daniel Walters, who is the TV critic from the Inlander paper in Spokane, will be on. And we'll be doing a sort of a spring preview, looking at all the shows that are coming up over the next couple months. Since any more... there's always something new starting.
Yes, there is. There's always a new show starting, and you never know what's going to happen. All right, on that note, thank you again, and everybody have a good night.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you on Twitter. All right, I'm out of here. Bye.
Bye.
We sit glued to the TV set all night.
And every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do. Then watch TV and have a couple of brews.
All right, so we're recording and I'm good to go, right?
We are recording. Whether you're good to go or not is yet to be determined.